Good morning. My name is Dwight, and my pronouns are he, him. And I want to look at the Old Testament story about Hagar in about Genesis 16. And we probably all know the story, but to cap, she is the rather unfortunate servant of Sarai, who is the spouse of Abraham. And it is a really messy story. Abraham has no children, so he isn't very happy. No lineage, and apparently lineage was pretty important in those days. His wife Sarai is not very happy either about it because she doesn't have any children. So she devises this plan for children and gives her servant Hagar to her husband Abraham so there'll be children in the household. I always wonder how Hagar views that. I wouldn't mind that conversation with her. But lo and behold, Hagar gets pregnant, and now there's some kind of animosity between Hagar and Sarai. Big surprise, right? Sarai gets upset. I mean, what's not to get upset about? And I wonder how ugly it got. Probably pretty. So now Hagar is not very happy, and she flees into the desert. It's kind of understandable. Yeah, it's just a bit messy among a few other things. So an angel finds Hagar at a well in a desert and convinces her to go back with some kind of weird prophecy blessing kind of thing. How Hagar's son will live in hostility towards his brothers. Nice. Keeps on getting better. And then Hagar, at the end of that story, kind of gives the well that she's at in the desert a name. Just a really messy story. What sticks out to you in that story? Anybody? Anything?
Angel comes to person who's oppressed.
Okay. Okay, cool. That, yeah, absolutely. Okay. That sticks out to us a lot. We're going to keep all of that in the back of our heads, and we're going to move on to talking about trees, because that completely makes sense, right? So, question, what does a tree need in order to grow? Water? Yeah, water. Yeah, water, sunshine, dirt, all those things. And other than natural elements, is there anything we can do to make the tree grow? Not really. It's spontaneous. It happens. It happens on its own. It's the natural order of things. Not only is the growth spontaneous, we plant an oak seed, an oak tree comes up. But it's also not inevitable, which means that if it doesn't get those things to grow, it's not going to grow. If it receives no light or sunlight or nutrients or air or whatever, it dies or it's stunted. Where I'm going with this is Canadian psychologist Dr. Gordon Neufeld, notice the Neufeld name, has developed a really cool theory based on decades of his own research. He's in his 70s now, and studying the works of other psychologists. And he calls it roots of attachment. And he does a fantastic job of explaining kind of human connection and interaction. What is attachment? Well, we've been told for ages that the primary drive for all mammals, humans included, is survival of the... Absolutely. That's what we've been told for a long time. That's our drive. That's what keeps us going. That's what keeps all of us going. Everything keeps the wheels greased on everything, kind of. It's the reason we still exist, because survival is kind of our prime mover. It's what moves everything. Except that it's really not true. If you look closely at animals, they thrive in specific communities. They gather together. They exhibit signs of being common, of being together, of protection, of caring. And there actually has been in the psychological world a ton of research about this. And the answer to the question of what is our prime mover is connection, or they call it attachment. It really absolutely is not survival. Attachment, as I call it, is our prime mover, our deepest desire. And I think it sounds kind of reasonable. For me, as I think about it, it sounds very obvious. And I think the research has proved that. So, as Dr. Neufeld says, attachment is our prime mover. And he has noticed how attachment occurs or develops between people. So, there's a slide here. And here's kind of the stages he says that people go through. I usually take about an hour with somebody to go through this, but we won't quite do that. So you can call it stages or roots. I like the idea of roots. So the first stage or root of attachment is being with by the senses. And so that's how we see each other, in either children as they're born and they grow, or couples, families as they get together. The first is through our senses. The next stage, next root they develop, which is a little bit deeper, is being the same as. We learn to be the same as. After that, I'm going to blow through this fairly quickly. The next is where somebody begins to realize we're loyal and we belong to one another. And after that, there's the stage or root that develops even deeper, where we realize we're significant or important to one another. We get to the next step, which is, they call it emotional intimacy. I like to say it's the stage or root where our emotions are safe with one another, or it's kind of like, I love you. I noticed my daughter, when she got to a certain age, she would look up at me and she'd go, Dad, I'm going to marry you when I get old. So you can't say that. No, that's actually just means her heart is split wide open and she loves because she's safe. The final level is psychological intimacy, which really means being known, that we know each other. We know things, we know how we act, we know who we are, we know those things. Psychologist Kurt Thompson explains, we live in a world that values knowing things. Knowing brings power and influence. It is an activity that involves a primary subject or person thinking, feeling, or acting while separated from that idea, object, or person towards which his or her thoughts, feelings, or actions are directed. This type of knowing is not so bad for facts, not so good for people. The process of being known, the final stage in that attachment, is the vessel in which our lives are kneaded, molded, lanced, sutured, confronted, comforted, bringing God's new creation closer to its fullness. And I really resonate with that. In our world, it seems that when you know stuff, it makes you important, gives you power. And we seem to be consumed with the idea of how things run, with the idea of right and wrong and get your facts straight. The trouble with that perspective is it misses the human factor. We're all human. It misses the way we grow into humans, attachment. Like the tree putting down roots, the final root of being known is critical for healthy family development. Dr. Thompson notes that the process of being known is the vessel in which our lives are kneaded, molded, lanced, and sutured. Without proper attachment, without being known, we struggle. Let's switch back to Hagar in Genesis. Oops. Okay. Genesis 16:3 says about Hagar, she gave the name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. For she said, I have now seen the one who sees me. It is after this that Hagar goes back to her messiness. When she was seen by God, she kind of settles down. Her sense of panic subsides. In the worst of times in her life as a slave, something happens. Somehow she is no longer just a slave. In an attachment perspective, what happens? I have seen the one. I have seen. It's using her senses. The one sees me. I am significant if the divine sends a messenger for me. I'm important. The Lord has seen your misery. This idea of emotional intimacy, of our feelings are safe. I see your pain. You will have a son. You'll be like everybody else. That idea of sameness. The Lord has heard of your misery. God knows me. The angel doesn't remove any of the obstacles. If I am known by God, if I am seen in my worst of times and God draws near, I'm okay. I must have some kind of a place besides what I see that's going on around me right now. Hagar becomes attached, I like that language, to the one. I have seen you, you have seen me, it gives me courage. Being known does some really amazing things. And I'd like to introduce to you a kind of a Hagar. And I will call her Amelia. And she is someone I've had the privilege of walking beside for the past year and a half. She's not from here, and she has given me permission to use her story. And FYI, her name isn't really Amelia, and maybe it's not even a her. So I might add that there are some difficult struggles in Amelia's story, and I've really sanitized her story. But even so, I'm aware that something might be, you know, someone might be affected by her story. So if you notice that happening and you want to take a breather, go take a breather. My intention is not to alarm anybody. But Amelia came in after seeing a few addictions counselors as she was struggling with excessive alcohol use and excessive anger. She really wanted to work on a relationship with her partner as well. She had a good career, was an aspiring artist with her own studio, but she was quite upset, and there were more than a few tears. I remember a couple of things I said initially, and these are some things I like to say, a couple of really weird things. And it was, first of them was, I'm really glad that you found alcohol, and well done for using it. And I don't believe you're an alcoholic. And I was truly sincere. And there was this kind of mixture in shock in her face as we sat there. Why would anyone say well done for being an alcoholic? Well, if someone is in very intense pain, it can be a short-term effective way of relieving pain. Of course it can, it's numbing. It's well done for surviving, you survived. And it's not an addiction to alcohol, it's a need to relieve pain. Begin to address the pain and the other is not needed. And so we began to explore what had happened in Amelia's life. One of the tools Wendy and I use is poetry. And after sitting with someone, we kind of craft a poem out of their words, not our words. And then we give that back to them. And that in itself does some changing. And we're going to hear some of the poems that we crafted from Amelia's story. The first one is called So Much.
There is so much to talk about. I have no relationship with my father and a poor relationship with my mother. Being assaulted, my best friend, my support died, not from cancer like we thought, but from an infection. I didn't get enough time. I had more plans for us, things to do. I feel like I've been in a spiral, not supported by anyone. I have dark thoughts. Sometimes it would be easier not to be. Anxiety has been so big, it scares me. I communicate well when I am sober. When I am drunk, I become scary. Yelling, swearing, fighting, shocking, sending mean texts. Thinking about doing something because I am angry. But I couldn't. I love too much. Shame, guilt, pride. Trying desperately to get someone to understand. I'm not an addict. I don't belong in AA. I'm just trying to stop the pain. The intentions are positive. I want to respond, not react. So much to talk about. Who will listen?
I noticed that Amelia has not had healthy attachment roots. And the fact is her parents did not either. All are a product of social injustice, actually. And I believe that Amelia is not broken. She is wounded and she needs some space to heal. And it was interesting when Amelia found a partner who was loving and kind, and she found someone that she'd always wanted. She found it kind of a hope. Problem is, when she feels or sees any hint of her person withdrawing for her, not giving her what she needed, what she expected, there's this terrifying fear that takes over. And she's learned to protect with anger. She has learned to reach for another, actually, by outbursts that are really saying, I need you, don't leave me, show me you care. But it never sounds like that to anybody else. All I see is the anger, not the need. The cry is, actually, who will listen? And Amelia says that in her poem. It's really a scary place for her to be. Back to Genesis 16, Hagar has fled to the desert. She's probably not doing well. What does a servant have to survive on? Who cares about a servant? Apparently God does and sends an angel with a message. Hagar then actually names God. It was Hagar who gave the name to God. Verse 13. She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. I have now seen the one who sees me. She has been heard and seen. The situation has not changed, but she is now known and it changes her. As we continued to meet, Amelia struggled along, working hard. None of this was easy. I worked hard, really, at listening, reflecting, noticing, holding space for her to be. Her next poem is called My Protection.
At first I felt like a bad person. Part of me gets so angry. It's like an alter ego showing up when I feel unappreciated and not validated or threatened. This part takes up so much space inside. I could feel it in my chest and stomach. This part has been around for a long time, and it tells me it's very tired. This part wants me to find someone who will listen. This part is afraid that someone is lying to me. It's afraid that someone will hurt me. It's afraid that no one will appreciate me. This part is worried that if I am vulnerable, someone will throw that away, throw me away, and I won't be heard. For the first time, I reach out and touch it. I begin to understand how hard it has worked to protect me. I appreciate it, validate it. Somehow this part feels comforted and calms down. I think I will call this part my protection.
Dr. Kurt Thompson says, I will argue that it is only through this process of being known that you come to know yourself and to learn to know others. There is no other way. To be known is to be pursued, examined, and shaken. To be known is to be loved and to have new hopes and even demands placed on you. It is to risk not only the furniture in your home being rearranged, but your floor plans rewritten, your walls being demolished and reconstructed. To be known means that you allow your shame and guilt to be exposed in order for them to be healed. Another struggle for Amelia was that she was ashamed of part of who she was. The part that got angry, and initially she called it her alter ego. So the two of us used our curiosity and explored that part of her. And, like the poem says, we found that surprising. The part developed when she was very young, and it worked very hard to protect her. When she was threatened, when it came out and she got mean, no one could hurt her. The part had really good intentions, but actually it was exhausted, and it needed a rest. Like Hagar's renaming, Amelia renamed her angry part from alter ego to my protection. Now, Amelia is beginning to understand and be proud of who she is. As Dr. Thompson states, it's through this process of being known that you come to know yourself. Amelia is beginning to switch from being ashamed to amazed. And strangely enough, the title of her next poem is Amazed.
I have been afraid of my emotions, trying to avoid them. But when I don't, amazing things can happen. I can spend time away with a friend and enjoy it. I can let someone help me buy a car. I can feel calm and safe while telling someone, you hurt me by saying that. I can wear my regalia to a powwow and dance. Dance like a small child who has no fear and is proud. I can be in a healing ceremony and feel free. I can wear earrings and a scarf, gifts from my closest friend. Even though cancer took her, I still feel her near. We were special to each other. We laughed often. I was strong and took her mind off what was happening. I am strong through my humor and strong because I cry. I realize that I am a good person, a good friend. I have good qualities. This is part of who I am, and others have noticed it too. Even though I was afraid, I am glad I did all of it, and I feel happy afterwards at all the amazing things that have happened.
Is Amelia cured? Fixed? And no, I don't believe that actually happens. What happens is we learn to live with what has happened to us. By being with someone, this work of learning to live with happens. Amelia still struggled, but she struggled with someone who could sit with it. Rarely did I try and say encouraging things to lift her spirit. I do, however, happen to be getting a little bit better at asking pretty good questions. It's the experience of walking with someone who responds in a healthy way that is life-changing. It's the exact opposite of what the person has experienced. And as I kind of reflect on my own experience here at Wildwood, I really notice the same thing has happened. As we have walked together and gotten to know each other a little bit, listening to many sermons and ideas that frankly challenged, they actually rattled my cage in a few cases. What I thought I knew, in a caring way, I was being changed. And I was actually laughing as I was thinking about this. What I was laughing about is, I kind of remember the first sermon I did and messages I prepared, and I'm surprised you still want to sit here, actually. I'm the one that's kind of surprised. You listened, someone heard me, and I heard you, and it was okay for me to come back again. It's life-changing. Hagar named the well in the desert Bir Lahai Roy, and I probably just butchered that, but it means Well of the Living One Who Sees Me. We imitate God by hearing and seeing each other, and by doing so, we heal our own woundedness In effect, you all have been helped. You've all been helping in healing my woundedness. I have said this a number of times, and I'll repeat it. I am able to do the work I am doing right now, partially because of how I've been changed by being here. I really marvel at us that what can happen through this kind of pain of change, and it is painful work, and there's a lot of tears. But tears are very different when they're held tenderly by someone else. This change kind of happens. And that's what Amelia's next poem is called, Wonderful Change.
I have been angry, I have been sad, but I'm not angry at myself anymore. I shouldn't be. My brother is a musical god just like his father. I'm from the same family. Friends see me as genuine and understanding. I'm daring to believe it. Since my pain has been alleviated, I try and listen more now. Listening for feelings, listening for what isn't being said, listening for what is underneath. It's weird. I'm not gossiping. I'm learning what I didn't know. I'm learning that I have been focused on everything else, trying to match others' energy. It's not a competition. I don't give a crap about trends. I'm tired and need to take care of myself. I want to feel healthy again. I want my art to say who I am. I'm not scared. I'm okay being uncomfortable for a while. I acknowledge that I am enough. I am loved. A wonderful change.
By this time, Amelia has reconnected with her siblings and is sharing with them. She's becoming more comfortable with herself and with her story. She's finding loyalty and belonging. She's learning to live with her past. And as she comes, they really begin to notice how she sits in her chair. She's relaxed. There still are tears, but they're very different. She's calm, even when she's crying. She sees life differently now, and she still struggles. Life is still messy, but it doesn't feel as chaotic. Amelia is a Hagar. She's returning to her life differently from being seen. And actually, I'm also changed by walking with her. I notice different things as well. I'm not the same. What we need to realize is how much effect we have on one another's emotional experience and how much they have on ours. And I would like to watch a video segment from The Chosen, and this is the scripture passage from today. It's the story of when Nathaniel meets Jesus, calls Jesus. There's some artistic license here, which I love. I love the perspective it brings. And I've always wondered what was going on when Jesus said to Nathaniel, I saw you under the fig tree. And he right away, cries out. I'm thinking, okay, there's got to be some backstory. So we're going to guess at it, or The Chosen is going to guess at it. The backstory here is that Nathaniel, they make him out to be, he's an architect. And his favorite thing in the world is to be an architect of places of worship. And he wants to devise these beautiful places of worship. And that has been just taken from him. He no longer is able to do that.
This was done for you. Blessed are you. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe. Israel, the Lord is our God. Hear my prayer, O Lord. Let my cry come to you. Do not hide your face from me in the day of my distress. Incline your ear to me. Answer me speedily in the day when I call. No? This was done for you. Do not hide your face from me. Do you see me? Do you see me?
Come and see.
Rabbi.
Well, this is a good night. Do you know who stands beside you there?
This is my friend, Nathaniel.
Yes. The truth teller.
I'm sorry?
Man is often deceitful. And Israel began with Jacob, a bit of a deceiver, yes?
Yes.
But one of the great things about you is you are a true Israelite in whom there is no deceit.
What did you say about me? What is this? How do you know me?
I have known you long before Philip called you to come and see. Don't look at him. Look at me. When you were in your lowest moment, and you were alone, I did not turn my face from you. I saw you under the fig tree.
Rab.
There it is.
You are the Son of God, the King of Israel.
I knew it.
Well, that didn't take long.
He doesn't mess around.
Because I said to you, I saw you under the fig tree, you believe? You are going to see many greater things than that. Like Jacob, you are going to see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. That's me, by the way.
Yeah, I got that.
Good. I know you like to be clear. So, you wanted to help build something that would cause prayer and songs, something to bring souls closer to God, yes? Can you start tomorrow?
I really like the artistic license in that one. What do you notice now about that story and about Hagar's story? What it was like, what it meant, what was in it? To me, that was kind of a Hagar of the New Testament. Joas said this in a recent sermon on social justice. Injustice and justice happen in community. So what do we do with that? For one, we can let the complexity of working out justice in community lead us towards grace. This is grace that's worked out individually in our community. When we sit with others, it often happens. Not always. There are many stories that aren't like Amelia's, and she's still working on hers. And it's really not easy. Social injustice doesn't leave easy solutions. Joe has quoted Greg Boyle lately, "Here is what we seek. A compassion that can stand in awe of what people have to carry rather than stand in judgment at how they carry it." And I really do stand very much in awe at Amelia's story. And I find that is what reimagining the world is like on an individual level.